The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
The Boston Red Sox push past the Royals to take the series, led by the war pig that is Garrett Crochet. The final score stands as 6-2 and raises the Red Sox up to a 64-win, 51-loss mark, good for 13 games above 500. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Terry Cushman Jr. and Jason Kelly, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? You can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Now, I think it is only right to start this conversation off with the man himself. Garrett Crochet looking like a real ace tonight, as he's been all season. But the atmosphere is just so much closer to playoffs right now than it's been up until this point. You saw him with that final strikeout coming off the mound, screaming. And I just love that. I mean, this guy is just a fighter.
Yeah, I mean, this is why it was important to take game one, because you knew you had Crochet for game two. And that Kansas City lineup is not exactly threatening. I mean, if you can contain Bobby Witt Jr., then you can pretty much shut down that entire lineup. For the most part, they have. So, yeah, you knew it was a good matchup for him. And this is why you go out and you trade for him and you extend him. This is why you got your ace, because games like this where you take game one of the series, you really want to take game two, you want to keep winning these series and, you know, keep threatening that top spot in the AL East. So that's why you go out and get him. That's why you pay him the big bucks. And, you know, I know they were harping on his innings pitched tonight. You know, he's going to set a career high with this team this year. I'm not too worried about him, you know, breaking down or anything like that. I mean, the guy's built like a moose. So I think he'll be fine. It, you know, as long as they can manage it a little bit, don't have him throwing 120 pitches every outing. But they manage it, and, you know, he keeps going like this. I mean, he might be the Cy Young favorite at this point. So, again, it's why you make the trade. It's why you sign him. And, you know, games like this really show you the value of having that ace at the top of the rotation.
So we got called out last night by one of our former co-hosts because we're, you know, too negative apparently. So I'm just going to say, you know, Garrett Crochet was okay, you know, 8 strikeouts. He did give up 2 runs. I mean, that's pushing it for a Cy Young contender. And yeah. So anyway, he did. He absolutely is in the driver's seat at the moment. But Tarik Skubal is right on him. Skubal does have an ERA of 0.06 lower, but Crochet is ahead with a couple extra wins. Not that that is the be all and end all. He is ahead by a couple strikeouts, and I would say if the season ended today, Garrett Crochet is your American League Cy Young.
I think it's a tough race. I mean, him versus Skubal, you really have two guys that makes you really like mourn for the fact that you can only give out the Cy Young Award to one guy in the league, you know, one for the American, one for the National. It really does seem sometimes like, you know, what happens when the two best are in one league. I mean, these two are ridiculous. They're putting up pretty darn close to video game numbers when the game is getting harder and harder than ever to do just that. I mean, you have some really dominant pitchers out there, obviously, guys like Framber Valdez and Ranger Suarez, two names that are going to be free agents that I'm going to be very interested in, they're great. But then there's just this whole other level that a guy like Tariq Skubal or Garrett Crochet is tapping into. And I've got to tell you, this debut season in the Red Sox uniform has not been going even according to plan, I would say. I mean, we knew he was going to be great, but this guy is electric. It's unbelievable. Every time he takes the mound, it feels like you're going to win.
100%. And again, it's, you know, he's had this pedigree all along. Everyone knew what a great pitcher, what an elite pitcher he can be when he's healthy. That was just the biggest bugaboo with him, is that he couldn't stay healthy. And he pitched for the freaking White Sox, who stuck. So, like, you know, he wasn't getting the win totals. He wasn't getting the notoriety around the league because who watches Chicago White Sox baseball? Not even people in Chicago do. So, you know, it was one of those, like, it kind of went under the radar. Everyone knew how good he was. But when the Red Sox made that trade, everyone said, okay, well, yeah, you're betting on a guy who, you know, hasn't pitched a full season. You know, apart from that last one in Chicago, but that was barely a full season because he shut himself down in the second half because, you know, he knew he was going to be traded. He didn't want to get hurt. But yeah, all the talking heads, you know, the guys on the radio saying, well, you know, he's very unproven. They gave up a lot of prospects. They gave up Kyle Teal, like, you know, better be worth it. It obviously is. You know, they knew how good he was. They knew his stuff was that electric. So, again, you know, it was a great trade. I don't lament it one bit. I mean, look, maybe Braden Montgomery turns into an absolute stud, you know, superstar out there, and maybe he comes back to bite us. But right now, I mean, Chase Mydroth is doing okay over there, but, you know, he's a singles hitter. He's not going to really burn you too bad. Kyle Teal's not really hitting since he got there. So, yeah, I mean, maybe Montgomery is the real prize. Maybe in a couple of years we're sitting there going, oof, be nice to have him. But for the most part, I don't know how you can regret that trade at all. He's just been absolute dynamite.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really beautiful to see a trade that could be, and I honestly hope it is for the White Sox sake, a win for both teams. I mean, love the return that they got for him. Was sorry to see those guys go. But, I mean, you just got to have an ace like this, and that contract extension is perfect. Terry, are you okay? I see the light went out on you.
Yeah, so I'm on the road, as I commonly am, not in a hotel room at a tournament like I normally am. So I'm on my girlfriend's parents' patio because we're up in Maine, not in South Carolina. And apparently one of my lights that I was relying on, oh, there it is, might be motion sensor. I just did a twist. I wonder if that's what I have to do. I was using my notepad here. I was flashing it. You guys can't see it. I'm like, how do I get this thing? But it may go on or off, and that's it. The last time I did a show here, it was a month before my mom passed, so we were visiting, and it was in the month of April in Maine. I was on the back porch. We didn't do one show a night back then. We did 2.5 shows. So for 3 hours, I sat out on a frigid porch. I think the temperature was 28 degrees. They had me wrapped in blankets. We weren't live streaming on all the apps, so nobody knew, you know, that I looked like an Eskimo all of a sudden. So I'm worried about the mosquitoes, but they haven't found me yet. So let's hope that they don't. But getting back to Garrett Crochet. He wasn't like in my top four or my top five necessarily, but by the time we did trade for him, Max Fried was off the board. The Mariners starters, all eight of them that we might have wanted, wasn't happening. DePoto liked to hoard them. But in his defense, Breslow was trying to push Yoshida on him. So we know who the dummy was. It was our guy. And so like my whole top four wasn't happening, and I wanted Cease, but you know, we hadn't signed a free agent pitcher to a massive deal, so it was hard to be optimistic there. And we still haven't. Well, I guess we kind of have. I guess the Crochet extension does kind of fit that. But by the time Crochet fell to us, I was like, thank goodness. Thank goodness we got someone who's probably going to be a bona fide ace. He hadn't done it for a full season. Last year, he did tail off in the second half a little bit, but he did lead all of MLB in qualified starting pitchers in strikeouts per nine. So he led all starters in that category, which is the one I covet the most, aside from innings pitched, obviously, because we can't have a Blake Snell type guy only pitching 120 innings a year. But yeah, so thank goodness we have him. Hopefully the health holds up. We're seeing the personality that I was hoping to see in April. He was kind of shy at first, but he's really, you know, he's the Hulk all of a sudden out on the mound. And you need a guy like that in the playoffs. You need a guy pounding his chest as he walks off the mound every inning. And he's certainly been that.
Most definitely. You can see always on the sidelines, whenever anyone hits a double, even a single, if it's an RBI, you see Garrett Crochet being one of the big guys over there leading these celebrations. He loves getting involved. He loves being a cheerleader for his boys when he's not on the mound. And it's just great to see. He really does love being here. The whole team atmosphere, we've been talking about how the vibes of this clubhouse have been improving so much from years past. One thing that I'd like to talk about with Crochet is really, I would like to mention a little sequence that I think really sets him apart from other pitchers. What a guy of his caliber. So first off, you go back to that fifth inning that got a little dicey. It looked like he started to lose a little control. He came out with some extra oomph to his stuff early on, started to peter out towards the middle of his performance. And that fifth inning, I think, really could have been bad. Because what you had Randall Grichuk ground out 107 miles per hour off the bat. Then, you know, that was the play where David Hamilton made that nice little looping throw, and it hanged around in the air just a little bit for my liking. I was like, oh no, is he going to leg this out? Fortunately, Grichuk couldn't. Then after that, you had Nick Lofton with a fly out to right field where, you know, Willier Abreu earns every ounce of gold in his glove on that, careening into the wall with so much grace. I mean, it just so much knowledge that he has of that field. It's intimate over there in one of the hardest right fields, if not the hardest to play in the sport. And then you had Luke Maley, single 100 miles per hour off the bat. And then John Rave comes up and fortunately lines out a little blooper that Toro sort of backpedals and grabs in the air. And I was like, phew, good for the defense. They really bailed him out there. In the seventh inning, I felt like he was also getting into a little bit of hot water. A walk to Mikel Garcia, a fly out to Perez, then a double to Grichuk. I'm thinking, is that it for him? He's approaching 100 pitches. We gave him the next two batters back-to-back strikeouts for his seventh and eighth of the night. If that isn't just the caliber of pitcher this guy is, to be able to step it up in those big moments, to be able to have little mistakes here and there, but send it home at the end, I mean, the guy's a beast.
Yeah, and that's going to happen in the playoffs too. You know, and God willing, they still make it. I think at this point, you know, they will, whether it's wild card or, you know, we'd love to see an AL East title. But yeah, that's going to happen in the playoffs. You're going to be facing really good opponents. And as good as Garrett Crochet is, he's going to get hit a little bit. You know, he's not going to get torched, I don't think. But, you know, he's going to have sequences like that where it's a close game and, you know, a runner gets on base. Maybe it's first and second, you know, one out. And you're kind of going, okay, this is looking dicey. But that's just how damn good he is that he's able to get out of it because he'll just attack the next two hitters. That's the thing. He doesn't shy away. When there's runners on base and he's getting to a little bit of trouble, he doesn't change his approach. He doesn't dance around hitters trying to get them to chase bad stuff and eventually, you know, walking them. He pounds the strike zone again and again. He goes right after them. So that approach is going to serve him well in the postseason because you can't dance around hitters in the postseason. You got to go right after them. And I think we can all see Crochet is going to do that, and he's going to do it with success.
And Jules in the chat stream points out, he says, remember when we wanted Jordan Montgomery real bad? I was one of them, admittedly. He says, thank God for that, because he was junk last year, had Tommy John this year, and he was chubby. He was a chubby monkey for much of that Texas Rangers World Series run that he was a part of. And, you know, that was a landmine. And I think George Kirby was a landmine. He missed time. He was the guy I probably coveted the most, honestly. And, you know, he's back now. He's got an ERA over 4. Could certainly still be a major player here for the Mariners going down the stretch. And I guess that's all that matters because they are in it. Logan Gilbert missed time. Dylan Cease had Tommy John. So we kind of got the right guy outside of Max Fried, obviously, who's been one of the best in MLB. If you're not going to have Crochet, Fried would have been pretty solid. But and I think Fried will have Tommy John here at some point during that 9-year deal. And another thing that's interesting to me is Walker Buehler's coming off of Tommy John. This is year two post Tommy John, or he's into year two. And the dude's cooked. He doesn't have a fastball. Maybe there's a role for him with his off-speed stuff, but it might not be as a starter. Nick, you pointed that out. I can't remember if you tweeted it or if it was in the war room, but you were astute with that observation. But then here's Garrett Crochet just absolutely killing it. Also year two after Tommy John. So the stars really aligned, for this rotation. And of course, Giolito has bounced back, and he didn't even have the full Tommy John. He had the bracing procedure. So, you know, this is the best rotation we've had in a while since at least 2018. And maybe it's better than that. I don't know. Who knows? Sale crashed hard in mid-August. I'm back out of the witness protection program again. Sale crashed hard in August of 2018. He soldiered through the playoffs, but didn't look spectacular. David Price, it was an episode of Scooby-Doo most of the time with him, So I don't know, but I it's just crazy how amazing your front three starters have been.
Yeah, absolutely. Giolito and Bayo just keep on impressing with their composure, really. They had their stinkers of starts in the beginning. I would say, just to throw a number out there, their first maybe 5-6 starts for each of them, there were the underlying metric concerns, which still exist to some extent, especially with Giolito. But I mean, you look at the guys, they just find ways to get outs at the end of the day. And that's really what the most important part is. They are legitimate number two and three guys. And right now, the discussion that I'm seeing, funnily enough, is who deserves to be called the number two. It feels like both of them do in some regards. I personally would go with Bayo, I think, but from the majority I saw online, I saw Giolito, and I don't really think there's a wrong answer. What do you guys think?
It was interesting. I forget who posted it, but they compared Lucas Giolito's last, I think, 6 or 7 starts to Garrett Crochet, and they've pretty much been the same. I think Crochet's strikeouts are a little bit higher, but he's been that good. Lucas Giolito has sort of rediscovered himself. People forget this guy was a high draft pick, a top, ace with the White Sox for a while there. He's been incredible. I think if you had to ask who I think is the number two, I'd say right now it's Giolito because he's just been that damn good. But I think Brian Bayo is, threatening that spot. I think he's getting there. One thing I do want to say is that, I'm glad if that report is true that the pitching staff kind of sat Andrew Bailey down and said, we're tired of pitching backwards and we want to throw more fastballs and, throw our stuff. If that's true, good on them because it is working. Giolito, ever since that report came out, Giolito's been great. Bayo's been incredible. Crochet was always good. But, Walker Buehler can't figure him out, but that's kind of his own problem. But the pitching has just been so much better ever since that report came out. So, I think that they sort of, sat Andrew Bailey down and said, look, your philosophy isn't working. Okay, we need to throw more fastballs. We can't pitch backwards anymore. And ever since then, they've had one of the best rotations in baseball. So, Lucas Giolito has been a huge, huge part of that. I think right now, if we were starting a playoff series, I would want it to be Crochet, Giolito, Bayo. That's the order I want to go in. I think Giolito is at that point right now.
I've got a take on this, but let me just point out real quick in case I forget. The hitting program also had a hard pivot where they don't meet as a group anymore. They meet individually. So I don't know if it's Fatsy, or, you know, some of his assistants. I think we have two assistant hitting coaches, but they all meet with the hitters individually. And that was a turning point for that aspect of the team as well in early June. But getting back to who your number two is, it is 1,000% hands down Lucas Giolito. That dude shoves. Just this morning, I was looking at Bayo's Savant chart, and I did not see yesterday's game because I've been busy with family stuff, but he is living entirely off of ground balls and weak contact. He is elite in those two categories. He is not elite when it comes to strikeouts. He has a below league average strikeout per nine of 6.8. I think 7.5 is league average. So he's not like way below it, but he is below it. And again, you know, weak contact. He doesn't get the strikeouts, and he doesn't get a lot of chase. So I hope we can ride this out for the rest of the season. And I don't know if that's like something he's going to be every year. I feel like if the league adjusts just a little bit, you might see an ugly 4 or 5 start window here until he can readjust. But I was really surprised to see how reliant he's been on the ground ball rate. I think he's like in the 86th percentile of all MLB starters. And then his exit velocity is similar. They're just not hitting him hard.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that too. And, you know, Bayo is one of those curious cases where I feel like on paper, when you look at his pitches, his arsenal, you think the guy should be like a big K pitcher, you know, a lot of stuff, get guys out, swing and miss. But over his years in the league, that hasn't really been the case. And so I feel like there was a bit of a shift in philosophy. I know that this year he started throwing a cutter. He's been introducing that into the mix. And with that, I think that he started to induce that weak contact. Yesterday, it almost felt like he was nibbling around the zone, like he does, certainly, and trying to get swing and misses. That's not really who Brian Bayo is. If he becomes the type of pitcher where he's going to jam you up, he's going to induce weak ground balls, our infield right now is far and away good enough to capitalize on something like that. So fingers crossed that, you know, like you said, adjustments can be made either way, but I have a lot of hope for him, I would say. I think that this is a bit of a reinvention for him, and he's getting to a point now where I think he's emerging as what he was always sort of supposed to be.
So another interesting stat, I mean, I wouldn't say it's extremely meaningful, but surprising, he's given up the exact same number of home runs as Garrett Crochet. They've both given up 12 home runs on the year. So just another example of, you know, opposing hitters not hitting him hard.
Yeah. And, you know, if he can really master that sinker of his and kind of turn into what a lot of pitchers describe as having like a bowling ball type of sinker, like it's just that heavy on the hitter that, you know, they have no choice but to pound it into the dirt. They can't lift it. Then that's fine. I don't need Bayo to be a 10 strikeout per game kind of guy. If he keeps the ball in the ballpark and goes, you know, 6-7 innings every time, and he only manages to strike out 4 or 5 guys, that's okay. You'll take that any day. So yeah, and you know what? Like maybe he does develop a little bit more. Maybe he finds a little bit more of an out pitch for him. You know, maybe it's that changeup of his. Who knows? And he can develop the strikeouts a little bit more. But you know, he's only 24, so he's got plenty of time to work on it. And the fact that he's having the best season so far of his career, you know, in the second half, I think it's going to be even better. So, you know, maybe that strikeout rate goes up a little bit, but at the end of the day, he keeps runs off the board, and he's starting to pitch deeper into games, which is something that he definitely struggled with, not just last year, but early this season. I mean, he'd be up to like 60 pitches through 2 innings and go, oh, jeez, here comes another bullpen game. Like now he's much more efficient. He's getting through his starts more efficiently, and he's going deeper, and that's huge.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, last year, he was also kind of a second-half pitcher. I think his numbers improved post-All-Star break. So, I mean, it's funny. The Red Sox are really playing their best baseball of the year right now when it matters most. Red hot in July after a pitiful May. You know, a solidifying June, a scorching July so far, a just nonstop August that's been wonderful. We seem to be getting a few things that seem to go against us in the early season go for us now. So, for example, there was that one play, I forget which inning it was, but there was a hit ball out in the right field. I think it was during one of our big rallies, and Grichuk was running in on the ball. And Jonathan India, for some reason, I think he thought he was playing wide receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs, because the second baseman for the Royals was running way out into right field, looking over his shoulder, trying to make a play on a baseball that Randall Grichuk was charging towards. And it managed to find the hole right between them, just the perfect spot between their gloves. And funnily enough, I think if India didn't try to do that, Grichuk at least would have had a shot at the ball. It looked like his vision was probably obscured. Very, very funny to see. And I mean, very good, because this team was not hitting Ryan Burgert very well at all. That dude was nasty, to be honest. He came in with, funnily enough, a 12.1% walk rate, which is just about bottom of the league. And despite that, he threw 61 strikes on 85 pitches. I mean, incredibly efficient. What Ryan Burgert is known for so far is inducing weak contact. And there were a few of those where our guys hit the ball. I think David Hamilton hit one to center field, right? Where you're like, oh, that sounded gone. And then it just sort of flops into someone's glove. Them pulling him after 85 pitches and who was it? Yeah, it was Zerpa. Angel Zerpa came out after that. I mean, we shelled that dude. And then poor Schreiber got the rest. And I mean, that was all she wrote after that.
Yeah, it's always nice when you're facing teams that are making the stupid mistakes that you used to make in April and May, when the team is just chucking the ball all around the field and looked like they didn't know how to play baseball. But yeah, that's going to happen. I mean, now this Red Sox team, it feels like they finally, you know, whatever jitters they had in April and May, like they've kind of figured that out. Guys are starting to play a lot better. They're playing a lot smarter. I think getting Alex Bregman back has helped that a lot. I know he had an error tonight, but he has stabilized their defense tremendously. Getting Marcelo Meyer up here for a little bit, that helped as well. Trevor Story having the season he's having, where now, and I saw someone in the chat bring it up, like, now you kind of have to look at his contracts like, oh, is he going to opt out? Because, like, he, if he keeps going, he might, if he thinks he can make more money. I don't know, with at his age, if anyone would. But, yeah, it's nice to see them, you know, taking advantage of other teams' stupid mistakes. I agree. Pulling Berg after, you know, just 85 pitches makes no sense to me. He felt like he was cruising. And once again, that feels like another Cole Reagans type of trade for Kansas City. Like, they just plucked some guy that, you know, no one really knew about. San Diego didn't want him. They gave up their backup catcher, Freddie Fermin, for him. And he's a 25-year-old stud, it looks like. Like, looks like they identified another pitcher. Kansas City's been really good at that last couple of years. So, but yeah, I mean, you're getting offensive contributions from guys you weren't expecting, guys like Trevor Story. Jaron Duran has started to really heat up here, which has been a big catalyst for their offense as well. Connor Wong's even starting to get some hits off the bench. Like, it's just everything that can go right is going right. And when it is like that, you just have to ride the wave momentum, right? Like, just keep going out there, playing smart baseball, and who knows, maybe the other team makes a dumb mistake and you can take advantage of it. I think that was a big part of the win tonight. So, you know, just keep riding that wave, because again, compared to what they were, how they were playing in April and May, this is starting to look like a real legit playoff team. And, you know, they're going to need that going forward.
Angel Zerpa has, and this was before tonight, an 18.69 ERA. Coming into tonight, has given up 9 runs in 4 1/3 innings, and then add whatever happened tonight. So, you know, Matt Quatrero has obviously done a very good job with that Royals team, getting them back into contention. They are a couple games under 500. I wouldn't write them off completely yet. This league is not good. And, you know, that's probably why we're thriving in a way that's kind of been unforeseen. I mean, you trade Rafi Devers and you go on this disgusting run. So that's part of it. I'm not going to go on my rant on what I think's going on. I don't think 7 games into a win streak is the night for that. But what I will say is we do have a lot of weak teams coming up, I think, in late August, early September. Teams that sold off at the deadline, a couple of those, the Orioles, the Diamondbacks are one of them. I know we have the Marlins in there, even though they have been playing decent baseball as of late. But suddenly, now that we've gotten past the Phillies, the Dodgers, and the Cubs, the schedule is a bit more favorable. So it's hard to imagine this will not be a playoff team. And then if they're not, if the sky does fall, I don't think it will, because I just think we're, you know, the rotation's so good. The bullpen is really good, you know, especially, I mean, I'm annoyed with the Matt's pickup because we did have more pressing needs, but he is going to be, you know, I don't know if he's going to be utilized in the eighth inning at all, but he's going to be a very good, reliable arm out of that pen. So we'll see. But I just think we're too good in too many different areas to miss the postseason.
Yeah, and we're playing our best baseball when it counts. You know, right now FanGraphs has us at an 82 almost percent chance to make the playoffs. Baseball Reference actually has us at 91%. Really, really good. I mean, you could not have asked the Yankees to tailspin at a better time for us. As of right now, they're playing right now. I think they're 0-0 last time I checked just a few moments ago. But I believe we're 3 up on the wild card. Really makes you feel secure as you can feel in baseball. And I don't think the division is entirely off the table. We will see what the Blue Jays can do after Colorado. They're beating up on them right now. They took game one. Of course, they'll probably take game two. But you know what's interesting is I was looking and thinking, really, which is hard for me at times, but you know, the 2025 Red Sox, they almost are reminding me a little bit of the 2019 Nationals. Just in the sense that the Nationals, you go back to that World Series team, and they had a pretty underwhelming April and a terrible, terrible May. And then they got hot. They went red hot in June, really good in July, red hot again in August, really great in September. And they carried that momentum all the way to a World Series championship. If the Red Sox continue this August push and then carry that momentum into September, who's to say it won't carry into October too? I mean, Baseball Reference, I don't know how they calculate this. They say we have an 8.9% chance to win the World Series. That seems pretty high to me, to give any team, really. But that's pretty good odds as far as that kind of thing goes. I would certainly not be disappointed if I heard that that was my chance to win it all.
Just looking through the American League right now, I mean, who are we afraid of? Toronto has played very well against us this season, so I don't think we should anoint ourselves as heavy favorites against them. Did we sweep the... No, we got swept against the Tigers, I think is how that went. So I guess until proven otherwise, you know, you have to consider them a threat, but they haven't been great since the All-Star break. They did lose 11 out of 12. I guess they have won 6 of their last 10. And then I'm going to keep the Mariners in the fraud category until they can prove otherwise. But you're going to have another go at Houston here in Houston. So we'll see. I'd be shocked if we sweep them a second time. But, you know, that's a team that knows how to win in October, and they do have Carlos Correa back, so perhaps he'll have a big month. And the Texas Rangers are a team that would make me nervous in a playoff matchup. They have good pitching. They've got some guys that can mash. I'm not sure how their bullpen is, but yeah, so I would say of teams we're afraid of, I would say Detroit and both Texas teams.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you about Detroit. Detroit definitely has that that vibe about them of like they've arrived. You know, they had a really good year last year, and you know, they're a young team, and they kind of made it into the wild card, made a little bit of noise there. But I think we all agreed they weren't ready yet. it feels like now they're ready. They're here and they're a real force. So Detroit would worry me a little bit. Toronto does worry me in terms of trying to snag the division from them. They've just had guys like resurrect themselves. Like George Springer looks like vintage George Springer. Bo Bichette, after having a really down year last year, is back to looking like one of the best young hitters in the game. Obviously, Vladdy's doing his thing. They don't have a weak spot in their lineup. They've got a really difficult lineup to go up against, and their rotation is holding together. They got Scherzer back finally. He's been, you know, up and down the last couple of starts, but if he's healthy, I wouldn't want to face Max Scherzer in a big game. You know, not right now. Kevin Gausman's kind of righted the ship as well over there, so they've got some good pieces, and they've got a strong bullpen to go along with it. So Toronto would worry me. Texas would worry me. I'm not as worried about Houston. Not until they get Yordan back. If Yordan is, you know, and it feels like he's having a setback like every week, if he's still not fully healthy, I wouldn't worry too much about them. I think their rotation is okay, but it's not great. So Houston, I think we kind of showed that, like, we can take care of them. Right now, to me, it's Detroit and it's Toronto and Texas as well. Like, those are the three that I would say, okay, like, if we're matched up against them, I'd worry a little bit. But otherwise, I mean, the American League is just such trash. The Yankees, you know, I think they're starting to go backwards. And a lot of that's going to depend on Judge with this elbow thing. Like, I know he's DHing tonight. If he has to DH permanently, that's going to be a problem for them, because then you've got to have Stanton out in the outfield trying to make plays, which is a disaster waiting to happen. So I'm not worried about them. I would say Toronto, Detroit, Texas, those are the ones you got to watch for. But the way this Red Sox team is playing, I'm not going to like be totally terrified of any of them. I just would be, you know, lowercase w worried if we had to face any of them. But the way this team's going, I think they can take on anybody.
Definitely. The Rangers, I agree with you. I think that those are three good teams, and I think my fears would probably line up with yours pretty well. That Rangers rotation, now that they have added Merrill Kelly to DeGrom and Eovaldi, that is a terrifying hydra. That is a vicious trio of starters to go up against. They've got a really feisty offense, I know. The Blue Jays, meanwhile, are just devil magic. I mean, I cannot understand how they keep winning games. But they keep winning games, and you've got to respect a team that can figure that out. Maybe they're frauds. We won't be able to say until October, really. I'm at a point where, like, I'm not taking any wins for granted. Maybe I'm just a little traumatized after the last 4 years, but I'm sort of waiting for the shoe to drop. You know what I mean? I'm like, when does this illusion shatter? When's the slump going to come? When is my heart going to be broken? Because this is by far the most hope I've had this late in the season since 2021, and maybe even since 2018. Even 2021 was kind of a surprise. We were in a race until the end, and then once we got to October, we made a lot of noise. But yeah, I mean, Toronto's been playing us tough. Detroit obviously swept us. I'm a little worried about, like, the three games in San Diego versus the Padres. I know that Nick Pivetta's pitch profile, he pitches really well in that park. Houston and the Yankees, we have 10 games against, 7 against the Yankees, and I'm just nervous about them because of how badly we beat them up. I'm almost like thinking to myself, are those two teams gonna let that happen again? You know they're gonna play you tough. And, you know, fortunately, we won't see them in the postseason, but in the regular season, I mean, we got 3 games against the Marlins, who are arguably just as hot as us. So just like I mentioned last night, lots of challenges ahead, hopefully lots of fun baseball ahead. I'm afraid of a lot of teams, but only in the same capacity that they should be afraid of us. You know, really great rosters and a lot of fight.
The Blue Jays, a couple of guys you didn't mention that have kind of recently popped onto my radar. Addison Barger has hit 17 home runs, driven in 54. He's hitting .263 with a .316 on base. He kind of punished us pretty good. I wasn't familiar with him coming into the season, but he's having a breakout. Another guy I was not familiar with at all, Ernie Clement. His power numbers aren't gonna, you know, pop off when you're checking his stats, but he is a .286 hitter with a 22 on base. He's scored 57 runs, and you know, a guy that kind of was a pain for us earlier in the year. And then you mention all the guys that you already have, you know, Vladimir, Springer, Bichette, that Nathan Lukes guy. I was looking at him. I mean, he's their right fielder. You know, 10 home runs, 45 driven in. He's a 259 hitter with a 348 on base. This is a team that gets on base, and that is what they haven't been previously. And I keep saying, I'm not going to go on the rant, but the super abbreviated thing, when you talk about the illusion, when you're waiting for the illusion to end, 2021 was an illusion, and you paid for that for the next 3 years because this ownership and front office was dumb enough to think that was real life. Now, maybe, you know, maybe this won't be exactly that. Maybe your kids will thrive. You know, Anthony wasn't even in the lineup tonight. You know, you put up 6 runs, but Rafaela, just career year. Duran, Abreu, for as long as they're here, they're going to be good, at least situationally. So, you know, we'll see. But I just hope that, you know, we've all been craving for those, you know, 2004 to 2018 lineups. I just hope that that era isn't over, because maybe it is. Maybe we're just never going to see that again. And, you know, I hope not, but we'll see.
And another thing to keep in mind is, you know, if you don't get the division, you know, that would be great. But if you hang on to that first wild card, you would have home field advantage for all 3 games of whatever wild card matchup you have. And the Red Sox have turned Fenway into a real home field advantage. They are starting to play really good baseball at Fenway. I think, like, forget what the date was, but since a certain date when they were 500 at Fenway, they were 16-16. And then after that game, they are now 22-5 at Fenway. So, you know, if you only end up with the first wild card, that's okay, because you'll have home field advantage for all 3 of those games, and that can make it a lot easier on them.
Most definitely. You know, I think that we'll see a lot from this bullpen. Obviously, funnily enough, we saw John Schreiber, old friend John Schreiber, who unfortunately just had a terrible game against us, sorry to say, for his sake. But it's funny because I was like, hold on, who did we get in that trade? And I looked, and sure enough, it's David Sandlin, you know, who we are now hearing is up in Worcester, pitching out of the pen, trying to stretch himself into a reliever. He could be in play. Slayton coming out, like we said, a guy like May or Buehler figuring things out. One thing that I think is going to be important is, of course, the guys who can go long. And interestingly enough, I don't think Whitlock has tried to go more than one inning since June. So right now, Murphy and Matz are the two in the pen that we have to hopefully lengthen it out. With both Buehler and May in the rotation, we'll see how much that's necessary. Alcala, of course, was just DFA'd. We have Isaiah Campbell up on the team. Let's take a look, however, at the probable pitching matchup for tomorrow. Speaking of Dustin May, he will be playing a 7:10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time start versus another old friend in Michael Wacha, who several years ago came to us, kind of reinvented himself, and has had a lot of success since then. Before you guys, you know, before I ask you your predictions and whatnot, I mean, this guy's been pitching very well. I was curious. I took a look. You look at his home and away splits, and he's not been very good on the road compared to at home for the Royals. But when you look at the 12 starts that he has made in Fenway, he has a 2.88 ERA in the park. So I'm expecting him to pitch us pretty hard, personally. What do you guys think?
He's familiar with Fenway. So yeah, that's going to serve him pretty well. And I have no idea what you're going to get out of Dustin May. He could be steady. He could be, you know, 6 innings of, you know, only allows 2 or 3 runs. Again, this Kansas City lineup is not exactly a powerhouse. They can manufacture offense, but you know, there are ways to beat them. He might also be done by like the 3rd inning and it, you know, just be a complete wild man, complete disaster. Again, if the Dodgers don't want a guy, that's a massive red flag. And that's not a guy that you should be pursuing in any sort of trade or anything like that. So the fact that the Dodgers said, no, thanks, we're good, you can have him, is a major red flag to me. So I, for that reason alone, I don't feel very confident. I think Waka is going to pitch a pretty good game. And I think Dustin May, it might be a disaster. So good thing they won the first two games. You'd like to win tomorrow, but if May just, you know, pukes on his cleats, then at least you took the first two games and, you know, we'll see if we can figure him out later.
So is that a loss, Jason?
Sounds like a loss. That's a loss. Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm not going to do it. You know, if this was only a two game winning streak, I'm picking Michael Waka all day, twice on Sunday. But I don't know. I'll ride the streak here and give the Red Sox the W. And, you know, you talk about the bullpen a minute ago. Besides Isaiah Campbell, who do you not trust? I trust them all, you know. And for some reason, we had to send Bernardino down, who was 11 straight games scoreless. Not good enough to pitch on the big club, apparently. But yeah, I mean, the bullpen's just solid. So if May can just grind his way, even through four innings, I think they can patchwork it. And I think this Red Sox offense is potent enough, but you lose tomorrow. I'm not saying we will, I'm picking the Red Sox, but you lose tomorrow. That's not a good way to fly out west to a very dangerous San Francisco team. San Diego, my bad. And so we'll see what happens, but I think we can win and keep the streak intact.
I hope so. I mean, we saw it tonight, fortunately, thanks to Crochet. The pen is rested. You're absolutely right. And with a day off on Thursday to travel, that is very, very nice. I love the airplane celebration, by the way. How great is that? This impromptu thing. That's always been my favorite type of celebration. You know, the ones that just sort of occur naturally. Sometimes, what was it? I know the Yankees had a turtle one year. I forget what the story was there. It was like in a pond at one of their players' houses. You had, I think, the rally goose for the Padres or something like that. I love those natural celebrations, and I love how the Red Sox took that turbulent flight out to Minnesota and turned it into a little victory routine. I don't know. I'll be a little pessimistic here. I'll say we'll probably break the streak tomorrow. I think Walk is going to put up a good game. But it's not even like, you know, it's not even a negative necessarily. You're going to lose games. You know, you go 7-1. That's pretty great over an 8-game stretch. Feeling great, honestly, about the roster. Just hoping that they keep showing up and grinding out wins. And honestly, based off of what I've seen from them, I can't imagine they would do anything less at this point. This seems like a team that really wants to win. They're mature. They're present. They're having fun. And you know what? I'm having fun too. Any closing thoughts, guys?
Fire Breslow.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, Mats and May, that's what we got. So far, Mats looks good. Of course, like you said, it pushed Bernardino down. We'll see what we get out of May tomorrow. I had a friend who said that he wanted to meet up with me this week to watch a Red Sox game. He said, choose which one. I said, the May start. I said, I have to see how this goes, man. So, you know, we'll see how much he's cursing me for that later on. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It's been a great game, a great discussion. Huge, huge win. Right now, the Rangers are beating the Yankees 2-0 in the top of the ninth. Devin Williams blew it again for them. I don't know why that guy keeps getting opportunities. By the time you're listening to this, it's very likely the results are in. Hopefully, the Rangers finish it out. I've been Nick, joined by Terry and Jason. We've been the Bastards of Boston. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.